Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni Bettici.
Hey Gianni, this is Prez.
Oh, Prez, such a low-scoring game week, but Salah did finally outscore Haaland. And we also saw big returns from, and if you probably got a green arrow if you had Mickey van der Ven, 23 points, Brian Mbeumo, 15 points, or Joe Rodon, 13. If you owned one of those, you were laughing. If you didn't, it was probably a red arrow. And over 6.5 million did captain Haaland. It was his first blank since game week two. And the most transferred in player was actually Nick Waltemade, who also blanked. How did your game week go?
Well, I was one of the lucky ones who had one of those players, right. And I had to work hard for it because it was the 4.1 million Joe Rodon who I got on a wild card last week. I played him over Sar, so I'm going to take some credit here, where I actually played four at the back and I purposefully had to start Joe Rodon. Obviously, I didn't expect a goal, but it was a good fixture. Leeds at Ellen Road are really, really good. We'll talk about them. But didn't have my own Brian Mbeumo, the Man United gem Brian Mbeumo. We'll talk about him as well. But how about you, Gianni? How was your week?
Yeah, it was a bad one for me. I mean, I was on 30, I think I finished on 39 points and the average was 46. So I was way down. And actually, I looked at my rank and I was fairly okay on the just before the last game, the 10th game. And then Van der Ven's 23 points saw a huge red arrow for me. So I was kind of on a grey arrow and then a huge red just from that one player. I think it's about 30% owned Van der Ven, but I didn't have Joe Rodon either. But interesting from you to, and this shows the power of especially defensive contribution defenders this season, you would drop an Ismaël Assar. Of course, it's a really tough fixture for Sar, but a midfielder that can offer you huge goal threat and play a 4 million defender. How times have changed in FPL, because last season you don't make that call without defensive contributions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah, and it was actually all defenders that showed up for me. So I got 52, but no returns in attack. And we'll talk about this. Returns in attack are drying up. Even Haaland didn't come through. But I did have the double Arsenal defense, Rodon, Senesi, and those guys just their points add up, like you say.
Oh, yeah. We still need to have that conversation again of double Arsenal defense versus double Arsenal attack, because you're on one, I'm on the other. And at the moment, the defenders are winning out. But which game should we start with, Prez? Where should we go?
Let's go Liverpool. Of course, Salah has returned, finally returned. And a lot of people are thinking about Liverpool picks from game week 12, or are they?
Yeah, I think that, do you know what, that late Salah goal, and boy, it was flashes of Salah from last season, like we haven't seen it this season, but the takedown and the hit was so good. Maybe there was a glimmer of hope for managers to think about planning for him in a few weeks' time. I think that goal might have changed a few mindsets, but we can't forget Liverpool aren't playing well. They are conceding goals for fun. They're conceding chances for fun. They look vulnerable and the attack hasn't still clicked. We're seeing players coming in and out. Wirtz, where's he playing? Isak with his injury. Who's the number nine? Who's on the left? And obviously Salah, even in the Champions League last time out. In fact, in the last two Champions League games, we've seen rotation there. So even his minutes aren't as bulletproof as they once were. Still, of course, pretty secure. It's Mo Salah. But what's your take on that Liverpool attack moving forward? Are you looking at a Szoboszlai or a Gakpo or a Salah from game week 12 onwards still?
Yeah, I mean, the headline obviously from an FPL point of view is, oh, Mo Salah scored. But the actual headline is Liverpool lost. And and that's where the question marks come, not just about the attack, but about the team. Like, how are they functioning? And when a team isn't doing well, the minutes for all players across the board just get into a question mark, right? I mean, they were losing. So Gakpo, who looked really good, came off on the 60th minute. Ekitike played the full 90 because Isak had this groin injury or a doubt anyway. So none of the attackers looked secure for minutes. It, of course, is Salah and he should be the most secure. But you know what? You say he took his goal well, but I actually think he scored because he had no time to think about it. It was like a snapshot. Yeah. And
instinctive.
Exactly. And then he had that chance very late on, which he missed, which he could have obviously scored. Last season, Mo Salah definitely scores that. And so I just feel, yeah, you continue to wait, monitor. But as things stand, I'm not looking to go there, even in game week 12, even though they're home to Nottingham Forest. We'll talk about the Sean Dyche Nottingham Forest in a little bit. But I don't really see it. If somebody really wanted to go for a player, actually, based on the data so far and the output so far, Szoboszlai looks all right. He got 22 defensive contribution points, which is a lot for a midfielder. And he now has more defensive contribution points than any midfielder. Who would have thought that? He has played a little bit in on right back. So he has got opportunities to rack up defensive contributions. But when you're buying premium prices for Liverpool players, that's just not it. You need a lot more than that. And Van Dijk's a good example, right? He's got 12 defensive contribution points, but if you don't keep clean sheets, I'm not paying 6 million.
Yeah. And what's he had? Two all season?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just not good enough for a premium. You know, Arsenal defenders cost the same and you get a guarantee there of clean sheets. Yeah. And then with that, you also pretty much get a guarantee of bonus. So, yeah, Van Dijk hasn't had it. Szoboszlai is an interesting one because I feel like he's never really been a fashionable FPL pick because he's not, you know, when we pick our midfielders in that bracket, we're often looking at those that play in wide forward spots. Szoboszlai doesn't play in that position, although he has been moved around a lot this season. But the DEFCON's been amazing. The set piece threat is there. We remember that free kick goal, was it game week two? He's been Liverpool's player of the season, but he's not the sexiest of picks. But I really like Spot, so I think he's now invaluable to slot because he's been the standout performer, isn't he?
And that in itself complicates things, right? Because if Szoboszlai plays in that number 10 role, then where does Wirtz play? If Gakpo plays on the left, then again, where does Wirtz play? Where does Isak play if Ekitike plays well? So I think we've talked about Liverpool a lot over the season, and I think we just need to give them time to figure it out. And given the prices of their players, you don't have to be the first one to jump in, right? You just go there when you have to. And we obviously know Mo Salah's off to AFCON after game week 16 anyway. So it's this question of game week 12, 13, 14, where they have excellent fixtures, where maybe you want to dip into one or two, but maybe not if you have a free hit. So that's what I'm thinking, at least with Liverpool players. But one guy who's really catching the eye is Thiago from Brentford. Yeah. And he scored again. He scored a penalty in this case. Now, Brentford between now and game week 21 play all the three promoted teams at home. So the fixture run is there for somebody who's cheap if your structure allows. And that's the question mark where, you know, my structure, I've just gone for a dead spot forward because I don't think there's a lot of value in forwards. But are you tempted by Brentford in general and Thiago specifically?
I really am. Like I looked at the forward spots a bit like you. You have your premium in Haaland, you have your mid-priced asset, whoever that is, whether it's a João Pedro, a Walter Mader, a Mateta. We'll speak about all these players coming up, guys. Stay tuned for that. And then I, in an ideal world, would go, you have an enabler. You have an eighth attacker who sits third on your bench. Ideally, they get in minutes. Krupe Jr. right now, Mark Guiu right now, but it doesn't matter if they're not getting minutes moving forward because they just don't give you a benching dilemma every week. And remember, we're playing back fours a lot as well. That eighth attacker spot is less valuable this season and perhaps it was last because of defensive contributions. So with all that in mind, I look at it and go, yeah, I'd probably not interested in the 5.5 million Dominic Calvert-Lewins that maybe we would be shopping in that bracket for striker three, but not much more in that bracket. 6 million, just a little bit more. Igor Thiago is putting up the numbers of the 7.5 million Matetas and Walter Marders and João Pedros. And with that in mind, I think we have to now consider him. So not necessarily thinking we need to rip up our teams and restructure, but if you are shuffling around the front line, like I've got João Pedro, I've got Gyökeres, I've got Haaland, I know I've got way too much money in there. My plan was to go down to a Krupe Jr. or a Mark Guiu eventually, but now I'm thinking Igor Thiago, the way he's playing and the way Brentford play to his strengths, he's got brilliant service around him. Damsgaard's such a good creator, anyone benefits from playing with him. But then Kevin Schade's playing so, so well and feeds him. He's become, Igor Thiago, the talisman in this Brentford team. It was Mbeumo and Vissa last year. Everything filters towards Igor Thiago. And they go from back to front so quickly, Brentford. Long balls. And Igor Thiago's so good at getting on the end of those long balls.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a well-oiled machine. It's like Thomas Frank never left. And of course, they will take time. Some games they will disappoint. But at home specifically, this is why the three home games against promoted teams at home at the G-Tech is what matters a lot because their home form has been great. They obviously beat Man United earlier this season. So now it's two big teams that they've beaten at home.
Yeah, and Villa. They beat Villa at home, didn't they, early on? I remember that as a
correct,
walking
correct.
Donor.
So yeah. Call that three then. So yeah, it's a team to back if you can get him as part of a rotation where you don't have to play him every week, but you can get the home games. A bit like Leeds at home. I mean, they're another team that have shown really great home form. Maybe Sunderland as well. So there are these teams that are showing good home form. And if you can get them as part of a rotation, maybe with your fourth defender or fifth defender, I think it's a place to go. But it's not that easy to predict results against promoted teams, as your team found out. Maybe we go to Chelsea next and just discuss, what did you make of the disappointing result?
I mean, when you go 1-0 up in the fourth minute, you just against a newly promoted team at home, you expect it to be fairly comfortable. And Chelsea just complacent. I don't think we gave Sunderland the respect they deserve. And Sunderland have been the surprise package probably so far this season. They've been incredible. The signings they made in the summer, they made so many, you thought it would give them, they need some time to gel. They bought quality, but that doesn't always work for newly promoted teams. They need time. They need time on the training ground, time to gel on the pitch. They've just adapted so quickly. And Chelsea, I think they often look tired off the back of Champions League nights. And I think the weeks where Chelsea and some of the other teams play Champions League, you're going to see a dip at the weekend. Now, credit to teams like Liverpool and Arsenal and Man City, because for years we've been watching them in the Champions League and the weekend hits and you don't see a dip. I remember it with Newcastle a few years ago and Aston Villa last season when they're in the Champions League. The slightly smaller squads or the more inexperienced squads, you see the dip. And I think we're seeing that with Chelsea this year. We may see it with Spurs. We didn't this weekend, but we may see it with Spurs as well. So yeah, Chelsea, for me, despite the really good fixtures, I never felt like they were a team I wanted to invest in. I saw a lot buying Chelsea defenders. I saw a lot rightly going after Enzo Fernandez because I think he's a good option in his own right. But I do have trust issues with Chelsea as a team. And that's why I haven't really been investing there or interested in the midfielders or defenders of Chelsea of late. Unpredictable at the moment.
Yeah, unpredictable is actually well said because, I mean, when you're playing Sunderland at home, they've got Wolves at home coming up, Burnley away. You want to get these fixture blocks and hope for the best, right? But the things are, number one, the returns are a little bit sporadic. You don't know who shows up. Is it Estevao? Is it Neto? Is it, you know, well, it's not João Pedro. We'll talk about him in a second. But is anybody but him, they show up with some goals. So it's hard to predict. You know, when you have a Man City goal alert, you know, it's Haaland. You have a Crystal Palace goal alert, you know, it's either Mateta, Sarr or Munoz. So like that, I don't think we have a talisman without Palmer in the team who you can rely on for return. So I personally went for Enzo and João Pedro, just hoping for, you know, two shots.
Yeah.
And obviously neither worked out. And but defensively is where I'm really confused. Like, you know, that team should be more defensively solid. They've got Caicedo shielding them. You know, Reece James is now back in form. Defenders are coming back from injury. Sanchez is okay. But I'm just not seeing that defensive solidity. Even last week against Nottingham Forest, they should have conceded two goals.
Yeah, I don't think Chelsea fans would, hand on heart, be able to say these are the first choice two centre-backs at the moment. No one really knows. Like, Shalaba's been great, but then had a really bad performance against Sunderland. I don't know if he's going to be picked for the next Premier League game. We've seen Achapong come in and do really well, but he's a kid and he needs someone alongside him that's going to be a leader. We've seen Fofana, who's always in and out with injuries, and Tosin the same. Reece James, yes, he's back, but he can't play three times a week. So he missed a Champions League game, but at times it will be the Premier League game he misses so he can play in the Champions League game. So lack of time together really affects that Chelsea back four. But you're right, with the midfield and with a Caicedo in front of you, you know, there should be more clean sheets than perhaps there are. There's talk that Chelsea could still go and buy a goalkeeper in January. That makes Sanchez obviously vulnerable. So yeah, for me, despite the good fixtures defensively, I still think they're probably a swerve. And then in attack, they are fun. Like, if you get the right guy, it's great. But as you say, it's just predicting each week that player changes. But maybe Liam Delap's back soon. And if Liam Delap's back soon, and we think he is, then maybe that player changes. But of course, when you've been out for 3-4 months, you're not going to go and play 90 every week or every fixture. But I'm excited for Delap's return. I'm excited to see João Pedro playing 10 with Delap. But at the same time, I do worry João Pedro's still not fit. We saw he missed the international break with Brazil. We know he's not been fully training. I think he's playing, I mean, players often don't play 100%, but I think he's playing injured. And five blanks in a row, he's not even getting the shots, is he?
Well, he's not going to get a sixth blank in my team because he's already out for Mateta.
Oh, have you gone early?
I have gone early because I had two free transfers and I know in no world will I have João Pedro in my team when he plays Spurs away, which is a tougher fixture. And Mateta is, you know, maybe let's go to Arsenal Crystal Palace. Now, in this particular game, obviously, Mateta didn't get the chances. This is the best defense we're talking about in the league. But I just think that if you go down the pecking order in terms of penalty taking forwards after Haaland, it's pretty much Mateta, who you know is taking penalties, who's getting consistent minutes and has great underlying numbers. So I just thought, you know, it's a move that I'll make eventually anyway. Yeah. I was not willing to take another price drop on João Pedro. So I've made the move. It's a little riskier. Obviously, there's midweek games. We'll talk about the Carabao Cup games later. But what did you make in general of the Arsenal Palace game?
Yeah, I thought that was I thought it was predictable again. Like Palace looked good first half, but Arsenal do what Arsenal do. They manage to keep clean sheets. They're really, really defensively solid. And with that, it feels like they'll always get a goal. And a 1-0 to the Arsenal always feels like it could be on the cards. And it played out. As a Saka owner, I was disappointed because he did look slightly off it. And we know he'd been ill and not training all week. We saw the early substitution for Saka as well. I always feel when you've got Saka on the pitch in the last 10, 15 minutes against the team chasing the game, as Crystal Palace were, I was thinking I might get some Saka points. That didn't happen because of the early sub. But yeah, Arsenal, I mean, we talk about machines. Arsenal are the machine, aren't they? If you're going to talk about one team and how they play and what you expect from them week to week, feels like we always get it with Arsenal. It was so, you know, 1-0 was a predictable forecast for that fixture. And that's just what Arteta delivered.
Yeah, and they're gunning for that Chelsea record of clean sheets, right? Like every game, they don't look like conceding. Like it's amazing. And not only that, their defenders are also threatening up top. So, I mean, Gabriel almost got the assist. He was unlucky not to get that touch from the Rice free kick. He hit the crossbar. He almost hit defensive contribution points. I mean, what else can you want from a defender? Like, Gabriel just feels like the best pick in the game, arguably, after Haaland.
Yeah. I don't like using the term must-have. Yeah. And we get asked it as content creators, you know, is this player a must-have? And we always swerve it, don't we? But at any given point in FPL, you look at it and go, is there a must-have in the game? And I remember at times last year saying Mo Salah was a must-have. This season, right here, right now, there's probably two. And I think you've just mentioned them. It's Gabriel and Haaland. I think they're the only two you have to play FPL with these two players.
Yeah. And I mean, it's about who you pair him with, because eventually everybody will be on Gabriel. So, I you know, a lot of people have Raya. That's fine. I mean, I question the save points with Raya. It's only 6 or 2. So I have personally got Timber in my team as the second guy. Now, I was expecting more in terms of attacking threat, but Gabriel just hoofs up all the chances. So it's difficult for Timber to get at the end of them. But it's not just corners. Timber can also contribute in open play where he underlaps when he's playing alongside Saka. So I think returns will come for him. I still think he's the best second defender to go for. And obviously Saliba had a little bit of an issue here, so he couldn't finish, or he didn't actually come out for the second half. So there are choices, but I think Timber, Gabriel are the two that I'm happy with.
I think you made the right call there, mate. I love that partnership. I mean, it's worth noting, because Gabriel is so good at all the underlying stuff, he mops up the bonus as well. So when they do keep a clean sheet, he is taking bonus points away from a Timber or a Saliba or a Raya. But that's fine, because these guys are getting 6-pointers. And as we saw early on in the season, Timber's great for open play, attacking returns. We haven't seen it of late, but I'm sure that comes back. I also think, like, Calafiori is worth noting. I do prefer Timber, though, and they're the same price, give or take, purely because of Calafiori's fitness. And again, he's someone that won't play 3 times a week a huge amount. We've seen him rotated out of the Champions League starting 11, I think, the last 2 weeks. I don't think he's played. But yeah, it's definitely Gabriel plus one. I have Gabriel plus Saka plus Gyökeres, and I'm reluctant to sell Gyökeres, because Gyökeres to Mateta was a move I was very willing to make. But like you, I'm pretty sure this week for me, it'll be João Pedro to Mateta. João Pedro and Gyökeres were both sort of on a last chance week. Now, it turns out both didn't look good and I'd happily sell either. But given the fixtures, I've just got to give Gyökeres a little bit more time, and then João Pedro to Mateta. But we should probably just discuss Gyökeres briefly and then go back to Crystal Palace. I mean, what do Gyökeres owners do if they don't have a João Pedro, who's clearly a sell? Should they be selling him, or is he still a hold for you?
It's a tough one with Gyökeres. I mean, he's also on a five game week blanks in a row streak. So it's almost like they're competing for who's worse. And you would never see it. It's Chelsea and Arsenal strikers. But it's just the way these teams play, like how they create chances, like João Pedro up top. Gyökeres is doing a fine job. If you ask Arteta, he'll say he's doing a good job. He's creating space for Eze to run into, for Saka to attack, for Trossard or Martinelli to attack. So he's doing the things. But for 9 million, you want your FPL player to do a lot more than just create space for other people. You want him to be on penalties. You want him to be hungry and attack those corners. I just don't see him in those corners and not attacking the players. He holds up 2 defenders, but yeah, I want more than that. So the issue with selling him and not going for another Arsenal pick is you feel like you're not maximizing the opportunity by not having 3 Arsenal. But to be honest, it's fine. It's away to Burnley, away to Sunderland as the next 2 fixtures. I just think overall, you need to have a structure with double defense. So whether you get there this week or next week, that's the long-term structure that everybody wants to have, if not triple defense.
And if you do have Gyökeres, there's a good chance you don't have Saka. And I know he was ill this week, but Saka, watching him the last few, feels like the Arsenal attacker. Clearly, you're wanting your team. The annoying thing for Gyökeres owners, yes, he's had the five blanks like João Pedro, but we've seen it in the Champions League. Only last week gets the brace. And you see a glimmer of hope there and you go, could he brace against Burnley? Could he brace against Sunderland? Well, maybe. So it's difficult. But as I'm with you, Praz, eventually I need to get to that structure of double Arsenal defence. I might do it after Burnley and Sunderland because other fires, but also given the fact Gyökeres maybe has that ceiling in one of those games. We all said early on the season, maybe he becomes that flat track bully. We haven't had a big enough data sample size to suggest that will be what happens in an Arsenal shirt. But we did see, was it the brace against Leeds in game week two? So fingers crossed, Gyökeres owners get some sort of reward. But I think no matter what I see versus Burnley and Sunderland, after that, I am moving to that double defence. He could brace and I still probably want to sell him long term. Yeah. And I think I'm okay with that. Palace, mate, you've got Mateta. I'm probably going Mateta. Buying Mateta in a week where he's blanked usually means you get to buy him without a price rise. But still, he's had a price rise on a Sunday night, which is crazy given the blank, right?
Well, it's not crazy when you consider that people are selling João Pedro and Gyökeres, who we've talked about. People just have had enough with those guys. And that's where this is coming from. And look, Mateta did score the hat-trick the other week, right? So, and it's not just about output. It's also about chance creation. He's got the most big chances missed in the league by a distance. So if your striker is getting big chances, well, if he puts in some of them, that's still better than your striker not getting any chances. So João Pedro and Gyökeres come to mind for that. So I just think, you know, in FPL, it's one of those things where it's not just about the guy you're buying. It's about the guy or the guys you're selling. He just seems like a good entry point. They've got three home games in the next four, which is Brentford at home, Brighton at home, Man United at home. And the away game is probably the worst team defensively in the league right now, which is Wolves. So you can't ask for a better next four. In fact, even after that, he plays Burnley. So this is a very good fixture run. I know Crystal Palace are still in Europe. They're leggy, but they just keep creating chances. They keep putting out the same team and their goals are very concentrated. That's the most important bit here, where if they do score, it's very, very likely to be one of Sarr, Munoz or Mateta. So you want as many of those guys as possible if you are backing Crystal Palace to do well.
Yeah, I bought Sarr on my game week 7 wildcard and I'm very happy with him in the team. And I'm very happy going double Palace attack. Buying Mateta, I'm not really influenced by the fact that, oh, Sarr's in my team, I've got that attack covered. Their XG numbers this season have been awesome. The fixtures are as good as any. Double Crystal Palace attack is fine. And the fact they've blanked versus Arsenal in a way is a good thing because fewer eyes are on them, despite still a lot of eyes. Ismaïla Sarr, worth a mention given the fixtures as well, Praz? I mean, he's considerably cheaper than Mateta. If you don't have a spot up front and you want an attacker, go Sarr, right?
Absolutely. His data, again, is very, very good. Now, normally speaking, I'm a route to points guy. And with Sarr, he's not on set pieces, he's not on penalties, but it's just that it's that goal share, right? So even if he doesn't have those route to points, he's involved. He's like a striker. So it's Mateta and Sarr who play. Pino has been playing, but he's been subbing off for Nketiah these days. So you don't know who's that third player. And they're not very goal hungry either. Their role is to create chances, to create space for Sarr and Mateta to attack. So I think Sarr is a great pick as well. If you have a space in midfield, some people are on Enzo and already a little bit disappointed. I'd say hold on to Enzo for a couple of more weeks. And then if you want to make the move for Sarr, you can do that as well. There's a small AFCON factor. So unfortunately, the longer we go into or closer we get to Game Week 16, the more people will be reminding you, just like the four yellows that remember AFCON. But we'll have enough transfers to deal with it, to be honest. Attack the fixtures in front of you.
Yeah. Ismaïla Sarr and Illiman and Dye for Senegal is going to be a formidable strike partnership, but alongside Nicholas Jackson as well. They'll be providing plenty of chances for him. I'm excited about AFCON. Okay, let's move on then away from Palace. You and I both, by the way, will have Sarr and Mateta, which I think will be fun. I look forward to our next off the bench together, where hopefully we're looking back going, we said that double up was on even after they blanked versus Arsenal.
Invariably, we will be talking the week they blank, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah, no doubt. Mate, we've done well. 20 minutes in, we've not mentioned your team, and your team are clocking the XG numbers. They're clocking the goals. They might not be great in defence. You guys all know who we're talking about, but they're good in attack, Man United.
They're looking good. I mean, and the numbers were saying so, right? I mean, they have played Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City already in the first nine game weeks, or in fact, it even before this game week. So despite the tougher start, the attacking numbers looked really good. And I'm talking non-pen attacking numbers, not the three penalties that Bruno got and missed two. So I think the attack is clicking, and no surprises, right? Cunha, great in attacking spaces. You know, his acceleration numbers have been really good. Mbeumo, we know what we get. He's a great finisher, runs into space. So he's the perfect right winger that Man United have missed for, I want to say, 10 years. Yeah. So for the first time in a very long time, they have a left-footed attacker who can take those shots from those places where Amorim wants him to be. He can even play up top like he did at the end of the game where he was playing off Xerxes a little bit. So I just think Mbeumo is a great pick in this team, and he's getting consistent minutes as well. And then you have Bruno creating chances for all of them and also, you know, holding space, getting defensive contribution points. I think this is a team that is worth looking into. They're a little bit expensive. I do have to add that when you do look at a Man United attacker, you think, yeah, am I going to pay 8.2 million or 8.1 million for Mbeumo, 8.9 million for a Bruno? But if you get them at the right points, I think they're good picks.
If you don't own a Semenyo or a Saka, I mean, Saka's considerably more, it's, you know, million and a half-ish, but Semenyo and Mbeumo, very similar price point. There's a lot without Saka. How do you rate Mbeumo alongside a Saka and a Semenyo in terms of where would he be in your like hit list if you didn't own all these players? Now, sure, most own Semenyo, maybe plus one of the others.
I think he'd still be third, to be honest. Like Saka is, you know, just the corners give him that leg up in terms of that's how Arsenal are getting their goals. So 50% of corners is Saka is what he's on. Yeah. He's also talismanic for Arsenal. So we talked about him. Now, he was ill, so he didn't play over 65 minutes. I still think he's the best of the lot, but he's most expensive as well. With Semenyo, look, the thing is, Kluivert has started games now, and we know that Kluivert is a little bit more selfish, and you know he's maybe better off the 10. He does take some chances, so it's not just all the Semenyo show while Kluivert is on the pitch, and also it affects his penalties potentially. So he's still a very good pick, and Bournemouth's fixtures are great from game week 12 onwards. Obviously, this week they're away to Man City, so I still think, look, Semenyo is a very, very good pick. He's talismanic, taking direct free kicks. So I would put Mbeumo third in this list. I think the question is, if you don't have a Man United pick and you wanted to pick Bruno or Mbeumo, who'd you pick between the two?
I mean, wouldn't we all love it if Mbeumo was the penalty taker as well? And then it'd be no conversation.
Then it's too easy.
Of course, yeah, the pens are there. Bruno could miss another pen and it'd still probably be on them, I think, as captain and main man. But I like Mbeumo because I'm someone that doesn't necessarily always chase routes to points, and I probably should. And I think that's my downfall as an FPL manager. I'm often picking on vibes. And if I'm looking at eye test and I'm looking at fun and I'm looking at ceiling and average position, things I often take into account that maybe sometimes give more weight than they're worth, and Mbeumo wins hands down, right? I look at, interesting you say about Man United not having that right winger for a very long time. Arsenal have got Saka, Liverpool have got Salah, and not only do they play on the right and they're left-footed and they've always got a route to an open play shot, but they're always the most advanced man on the pitch. I mean, you look at the pass maps for Man United, and Mbeumo is that outlet. He is that highest average position. He's usually the closest to goal, and he's a huge goal threat. And when you've got creativity like Bruno behind you, you're just going to get goals. What a dummy for Bruno at the end, by the way, for that second goal from Mbeumo. So given the fact he's a million cheaper, even without pens, I still would go there just because I like the position he takes. Now, sure, if Bruno goes and starts playing number 10, I'd probably go there. And I know the points between him playing 10 and him playing deeper don't vary massively, but in my head and for the ceiling, I think it perhaps does. But look, Bruno, Man United need Bruno deep because he's so good for the team, and it's really working out at the moment.
Yeah, the position for Bruno isn't going to change, but you just have to understand the route to points with Bruno, right? I mean, if you look at his last two games, he's not done much, got one assist, but he's on 12 points in the last two games because in one of them he got defensive contribution. He's been attacking. So if you're one of those managers that don't mind that my player doesn't look that threatening, you know, the non-vibes players, then they will go, you know what, over the season, Bruno's going to be fine. So I know what I get with him. With Mbeumo, I'm going to get him now. And by the way, the price difference is going to be 0.6 very soon if Bruno drops and Mbeumo rises, which is possible. So it's not that much of a difference. So it's a really two-taste thing, like you said. Both are good picks for their price. Mbeumo, of course, sorry for the caveat again, is off to AFCON. So we have to remember these things as we're going for these picks. I think they're both okay. And it's also okay to go neither, right? I mean, Man United, has not become the fourth best team in the league all overnight. They are still susceptible to the odd game where they will just not score. They will look disappointing. Amorim out, chance will come back. I hope not as a fan, but it's just that team is not yet ready. It's not the oiled machine that we're talking about that even a Bournemouth is at the moment in terms of attack. You know what you get. Arsenal certainly is. So it's why I would say, you know, Saka, Semenyo are slightly better at the moment. But if you wanted to, I think Mbeumo is appealing.
The quality on show, though, Man United, Brighton, two teams massively benefiting from a week on the training ground. No European football, yeah. I think it was clear, and looking fresh. And because of that, we saw six goals. I mean, Brighton are worth still looking at. I went Minta in game week 7. And I think I'm right in saying, Praz, you considered Minta on your wildcard in game week. Did you wildcard in 8?
I wildcarded in 8 and I very strongly looked at Minta.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Because his minutes are just very good, and he's like Semenyo of last season, where he's playing on the wing, but his minutes look very good. They don't have Europe, and so you will get consistent 90s from him. I don't love the fact he started playing a little bit on the left, because he is also left-footed. He's also a bit like Semenyo, ambidextrous, but he prefers his left foot. So I'd rather him playing on the right-hand side so that he has better goal threat. Like, he's okay with attacking threat or assist threat, but I want goal threat. So I think he's a good pick. I just get spooked with Brighton in terms of, you know, when we get to game week 12, 13, 14, does Hurstler rotate? He loves to rotate. But Minta looks most solid in terms of an attacker if you wanted to go.
Yeah, he really does. When you see the substitutions in-game, Minta's just getting 90 and he's often changing 4 of the front 5. It's like, yeah. No, Minta stays on the pitch. I'm with you. I don't like him on the left as much. I want Mitoma in that team on the left because... Yeah, the assist threat's there. The left foot crosses from Minta are awesome, but I'm not really interested in the crosses as an owner. I want the goals. I want the shots.
You want shots.
I want the greedy stuff. I think Brighton Palace is always a fun fixture. I hope that's got goals for us next time out. I guess the surprise package of the weekend, Praz, for many was seeing Haaland blank against a Villa team that looked bad in the week. They obviously played Thursday night Villa and didn't have a huge recovery time compared to City that I think played Tuesday night. So not only a Haaland blank, but also a Villa win with a clean sheet was quite an upset. And I don't think it changes our perception massively of Villa, who have been so inconsistent this season. But probably the headline from an FPL perspective is maybe we're a bit cooler on Man City now.
So I was at this game. I took my Villa supporting son and I obviously went into it telling him, look, if Haaland scores, at least you'll get to watch Haaland. It's okay. And then they end up winning, which was an incredible game. And the atmosphere just turned amazing once Villa scored. Now, City actually started pretty strong. Haaland had that one-on-one chance, which he missed, which is unlike him, but it happens. He is human. And I think City were fine. Like, I don't think it's a case of, are we really now lukewarm on City because Haaland did his things. He just didn't get enough service. They had 18 goal attempts, but all of them were weak attempts. So they knocked on the door, as it were, but Emi Martinez was strong. I think in terms of City first, the concern was Reinders starting in the central defensive midfielder role, which, you know, in the absence of Nico Gonzalez and Rodri, maybe he does that more. But what was worse was when they did bring Nico Gonzalez on, Reinders did go up top or up top in the 10 role. It wasn't effective. Then Shirky came on. So it's just telling you there's now enough alternatives in that team that his minutes are going to be managed. His goal output is anyway all right. So when you compare him with other picks like Minte, who we just talked about, I just think they're superior. So either you go down to a Xhaka or a Dewsbury Hall where you get some output, you don't have to play them every week, or you go up to somebody like a Minte, or if you could go further to a Sar, to an Enzo. So it just feels like Reinders, who did have a price drop last night, rightly is now losing flavor within FPL managers.
Yeah, people have really high expectations because they see the Man City blue and they see a spot in your attacking lineup and they expect points every week. But, you know, you've only paid 5.5 million for this midfielder and you've got to manage your expectations with him. I think he should be a 7th or 8th attacker in your team. He's currently between 7th and 8th each week. I've benched him the last 2 weeks and I've been very happy to bench him. I think I still want him in my team because there'll be runs where I know he's going to start as the number 10 and I want to chuck him in. But you've got to know, guys, this is a player that will get equal minutes as the number 8, probably 50% of his minutes as number 8, and then 25% as a 10 and 25% as a CDM. He played all three roles a lot at AC Milan. Pep sees him as his versatility being a huge, huge benefit. Ideally, you want him to see him as the 10, but now Marmoush is back fit and Cherky's back fit and Foden's playing well and Bernardo's played really well the last couple of games. He's not just going to walk into that spot. So is he in the first choice 11? Yes, probably as the number 8. But is he guaranteed to play every game between now and Christmas? No, he's going to miss a few. He's not going to miss one. He's going to miss a few because Pep, over the festive schedule, if he's got a lot of fit players and the likes of Cherki, Marmoush, Foden, Bernardo are also fit, he's going to see some rotation. So yeah, I think he's sellable, but I also think we shouldn't be scared to bench him and think about picking him for selective fixtures when we think he'll be playing 10. But that means you've got to predict Pep, which isn't fun doing either, you know.
Foden looked a little bit disappointing as well. Yeah. I mean, he's getting good minutes, but it just feels like everything just goes to Haaland. Like Foden, I don't think took a shot on goal. And this is going by eye test as from somebody watching in the stadium. I haven't looked at the stats, but he wasn't threatening at all. On goal, got the yellow card, so another one pointer for him. And you also feel that, again, his minutes are going to become questionable inevitably because, you know, Marmoush came on, Cherki came on. How much can you keep playing in that number 10 role, especially if you're not getting that goal output? You know Marmoush, when he gets consistent minutes, he gets involved in those goals.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Pep to play Foden out wide. Like, we've seen him play him wide right and wide left. And I think when he does that, it'll be interesting to see how he looks because Foden doesn't want to play there really, but he might just have to, or he might just have to take a spot on the bench again. I think he's a harder void for me at the moment. It's been frustrating for Foden owners because you've watched the last couple of games before this weekend and gone, I've been dodging points, I've been close. Now, I remember there was a goal, I can't remember, maybe it was against Burnley, I think it was taken off his toe and it went down as an Estevone goal and it was so nearly Foden's. But yeah, still not an FPL asset right now for me, but playing well enough to keep a spot in the team, maybe. Bournemouth, should we go there? Because
yep.
Bournemouth Forest was a good game. And I thought Forest, after winning in Europe and Sean Dyche, that was a really tough opponent for Bournemouth this week. And actually 2-0 deserved it. They're just looking so good. We keep mentioning it, but you know, no European football is massive for teams like Bournemouth and Brighton and Man United. They're teams we want to invest in. They're good teams, not playing in Europe. They look so fresh at the weekend.
They did. And this is the thing. I think people need to remember these teams that are not in Europe, Brighton being one, Man United being another, that, you know, over the season, especially over the Christmas break, you'll see it in terms of minutes. You'll see in terms of how good they look throughout the game. And that affects, obviously, clean sheets. So I'm happy to own two Bournemouth, even though I was shocked that Senesi didn't get his defensive contributions. I think he'd got them in all but one game so far. So this was a little bit shocking. He only ended up with five.
Nowhere near it. Yeah, nowhere near it. I guess Forrest was just so barely threatened. I didn't watch the game. But yeah, when I saw that, I was shocked. I think I saw him on five or six and was like, what happened to Senesi? And a yellow card.
I think it was a little bit of a Sean Dyche performance that he's still trying to figure things out. They had three substitutions at halftime. So Sean Dyche is still trying to see how this team operates. Now, Chris Wood wasn't in any of those substitutions, which is a little bit of a worry. I don't think anybody owns Chris Wood or is going there in due course. I was excited to see Igor Jesus.
Yeah.
If he gets some minutes and if he gets some goal threat, because he could be exciting. He's quite cheap as well, but his 45th minute sub didn't help. But overall, I think it was one of those games where you can't read too much into the Forest performance because Sean Dyche is trying to figure things out. Away to Bournemouth is a tough fixture, right? So it's not the one where you want to take as your first Premier League game. And we just wait and watch because at some point, Forest defenders will come back into vogue because it is Sean Dyche at the end of the day. Nothing much to say on Bournemouth, to be honest. Krupi Jr.,
yeah.
Could he break the game?
Oh, if Evan Nilsson was out long term, I think he would. But that, yeah. In terms of ownership, but it's going to be really interesting. The way he's playing, there's a chance when Evan Nilsson's back that Krupi keeps his spot. And I know Evan Nilsson's the big money buy and he's so good for the team. But Evan Nilsson's naturally, for me, since he's been in the Premier League, hasn't had great goal threat. I think he's been a brilliant part of the output up top for Bournemouth. A bit like we're saying with Gyökeres, like when I'm paying 9 million for Gyökeres, I want someone that's going to do more than just run the channels and hold up play and feed others. I want someone that's more than just a team member that's helping the attacking midfielders. I often think with Evan Nilsson being his brilliant self as a footballer really helps the Kluivert picks and the Semenyo picks in FPL, but he doesn't necessarily go and get you those numbers for goals himself. Krupi might be the opposite to that. He might be more of a lone ranger, but might go, I'm going to actually get goals. And with that in mind, knowing his price point, there's a chance he continues to get starts. Wow, that would be fun. Going there would be loads of fun.
Yeah, and it fits with the structure as well, as we talked about. Like, a lot of people are looking at a very cheap striker. So who better than a 4.6, I think he is now. So yeah, one to watch. But yeah, I wouldn't go there now. I think Ivanisson will be back soon anyway. And then the last thing, just on Semenyo, I know we touched on him, but it was actually he was very off in this game. He had just one penalty area touch. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And just one shot on target, which, and he accumulated like 0.03 XG. But it's one of those games. It happens. It is a Sean Dyche team, and let's monitor. But I still think Semenyo is a very, very good long-term hold.
When I look at my team set up for next week on a Monday morning, I'm sure everyone does it. You look at your points from the week, just go on and you sit your bus team up. And I had a benching dilemma coming up this weekend. So I just put, oh, Semenyo's got Man City, let's put him on the bench. And I was like, Gianni, what are you doing? You can't put Semenyo on the bench. But obviously the fixture's tough away to Man City, and I will be starting him. But you have to remember, teams like Man City away from home will come at you. That's great for Semenyo. Think back to Anfield on the opening night of the Premier League campaign this season. He was awesome. So yeah, guys, don't worry too much about a Semenyo blank. And actually, a fixture like Man City away, I don't know if you agree with this, Praz, but it's actually quite a good fixture for Semenyo.
Yeah, I think teams like Brighton, Crystal Palace, Bournemouth don't mind these games where they don't get the ball, because they have a great counter-attacking team. They have got great wingers, speed, and they transition really quickly. So yeah, I don't worry. It's not the best fixture. I'd rather Semenyo plays home to, you know, Fulham or whatever when he got those 19 points. So it's not a great fixture, but yeah, I don't think he's benchable.
Yeah, yeah. On Forest, Dyche, we just have to wait and see with defenders. But word of warning, I did this for West Ham. I thought as soon as West Ham make a change, a defensive manager comes in, they're going to start keeping clean sheets under Nuno. Bought in Kilman on wildcard, and West Ham have continued to look rubbish. So don't automatically think new manager means clean sheets straight away. Since then, I think I paid 4.4 for Kilman as my fifth defender, but fourth defender. But yeah, he's already dropped in price, and West Ham have conceded more goals than I can remember. So I still think Forest are a wait and see. That'll be better defensively, of course, now. And they will keep clean sheets, unlike West Ham, but still not ready to go there. And they're expensive because they did well last year.
Exactly. I was going to say that the price is something that is also an issue. So we wait and watch. Speaking of defenders getting hauls.
Oh my God.
Who owned Van de Ven? I didn't. You didn't. But a lot of people did. 30% people owned Van de Ven. And they all showed up after he scored this brace. I didn't know so many people owned Van de Ven. But well done to them.
When I saw the points come in, when I saw the returns on my phone, I was like, oh, okay, Van de Ven goals, fine. He'll have really low ownership. I would have guessed under 10%. I started the season with Van de Ven, and a lot did, but also a lot sold really, really early. We realized he wasn't a defensive contribution guy. And we also thought, for someone of his physical stature, he's never been a massive goal threat, but he's been reasonably good at set pieces. But now under Thomas Frank, what we didn't realize was Thomas Frank drills his teams. Their set pieces are always awesome. And Van de Ven, he's one of the fastest players in the Premier League, but he's also got a jump on him. Those fast twitch fibers are working overload, and he's going to get goals. It made sense. I think Van de Ven's numbers from set pieces are going to be so much better under Frank. And given the price point, and given the fact Spurs will also keep clean sheets, sure, we don't get defensive contributions. Maybe we don't need to. He's actually a really good pick. And I think I probably just completely underestimated that when I sold him.
I mean, all analysis, 23 points is still a lot. Of course, great if people went there, a brace, defensive contribution, clean sheet. I mean, this is just nirvana for owners. But I think in general, like you said, speaking of Spurs, they just look very efficient. Like, people have this narrative that they're looking, you know, not great in attack, but better in defense. They've actually scored the most number of goals in the league this year alongside Man City. So it's a good team that are playing well. And under Thomas Frank, they're not the Spurs of last year. So when you look at your Chelsea players this week who are away to Spurs, it's a tough fixture. That's just where we are with them. Their defense, you know what you'll get, well-structured. And from an Everton point of view, first loss in their new stadium. But Ndai was great. I don't own Ndai, and I was watching the game. And I was saying, this guy's so good, man. I mean, if Beto only finished his chances, he's very good.
I instantly regretted it after I wildcarded not putting him in, because I think they played, was it Man City? Again, he blanked, but played really well. I watched a Man City game when I should have put him in on wildcard. And again, he's top of my radar. He's Everton's best player by some distance. I know Grealish is good and Dewsbury Hall's great value, but Ndai's the one. And by the way, the number nines, even Moyes came out and said, look, they're struggling. We need our nines to get goals, and Beto can't and Barry can't. So it's a slight problem for them because they've got so much creativity behind them. So again, wait and see on Everton. If a number nine does start scoring, though, obviously they're cheap and they've got great service and okay fixtures. But looking at forwards, Praz, I mean, this is a week where many will be making a forward transfer. Loads went well to Marder this week. I think he was the most transferred in and he blanked. Do you look, you've gone Mateta. I'm very likely to go Mateta. Do you think we should still be looking at Walter Marder? Is Mateta just way better as an option? I think he is. I think Mateta is substantially better than Walter Marder as a pick right now.
I think just in terms of goal share, yes. And now Walter Marder has done really well, but he does have, I mean, so does Mateta, but with Walter Marder, you don't know his minutes, right? Some games he might come off on the 70th minute, some games he might play past the 80th minute. It's a bit like Gordon. I own Gordon, and every time he's subbed off, I'm so frustrated because he gives a lot and he looks threatening, but players playing 90 minutes adds a lot to their chances of getting lucky, right? So I think Mateta higher than Walter Marder, but you could go cheaper. You could go Thiago. We talked about him. You could go Krupe Jr. Or you can just dead end that spot. Go Giu or Obi. I've got Obi in my team. So I think it's a structure question more than who is the best pick. But I do think with the fixtures that Crystal Palace have now, that Mateta would be top of my list.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. Mateta for me, worth keeping an eye on Krupe Jr.'s minutes. I'm really interested to see when Evan Ilson's back in that team, if Krupe gets start still. And even when Evan Ilson was fit earlier this season, we were still seeing some early subs. So Krupe's going to be an option, I've got no doubt, this season.
Yeah, and we'll have midweek fixtures for more data points. We've got Arsenal playing Brighton. We've got Man City away to Swansea. Newcastle and Spurs should be fun. And of course, Liverpool Crystal Palace. That game in game week 6 that everybody was talking about, the teams on a high, they've both lost a lot after that. So yeah, lots of games to be played. So do monitor how the prices are changing and how the fitnesses are working out for your teams.
Oh, and Kelly, Jules and Sam, they'll be back on Thursday. And Sam, Praz, wow, cover your ears, guys, if you don't want to hear about Van de Ven. But I'm pretty sure Sam bench boosted with 23-point Van de Ven on there. So I'm guessing she had a monster bench boost.
Lovely.
So yeah, they'll be reflecting on the midweek matches as well. They'll be discussing all the key talking points ahead of Game Week 10.
And if you haven't already done so, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Gianni, it's been great chatting. Good luck in Game Week 10.
Likewise, you too, mate. And we'll see you guys very soon.